Ooh, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 98, Retailer Talk with Chris Walsh. I am Chris Mosby.
I am Caleb Gerard.
I'm Murray Fox.
I am Chris Walsh.
Yes. Welcome. You prefer Christopher or Chris?
I'm fine either way.
Okay, all right. Here we go. Because I'm going to be known as Mosby for this episode, just to be so we won't be confusing, so everybody can keep score at home.
Yeah, just so we don't, bend the space time continuum and end up canceling a Legion book or anything.
Yeah, we don't want that. Do not want that. Not that that's hard to do, but anyway.
Well, Legion is dying a very, very slow and painful death right now.
Yeah, I haven't read the last issue yet. I'm kind of regretting it just a little bit, but we'll get into that. All right, then.
Don't torture yourself, man. It's.
Should I just skip it?
God, it's. I don't know, Murray. Have you read it yet?
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
Does anybody survive?
I wouldn't mind it. Yeah, I don't think there were any added fatalities this issue.
Oh well, then I might read it then.
Until Wolverine showed up and snicked.
Oh man, okay.
Yeah, we were wondering who the fifth Fatal Five member was. There you go.
Okay, all right.
Wolverine.
Wolverine, yes. Wolverine. Okay, let's get into it. Go ahead, Caleb.
Sales is what the fifth member, the Fatal Five, is. Or lack of sales. So finally we're able to get Chris in here to talk about Retailer Talk. We've had a couple of missteps the last couple of weeks, mostly due to me and lack of communication with you. Apologies, man. It's been a little crazy around Shea Gerard the last few weeks. So it's all on me, though. So thank you for making time this morning to give us your unique insight into the retailer side of this this market here, because we're just three fanboys most of the time, and you have the advantage of being not only a fanboy but also a retailer. So thank you for that. So I want to start, and because we were joking about it, might as well start there. This Age of Ultron thing. One of the things that we were talking about pre-show was that this thing came polybagged, is that right?
That's correct.
Why?
I'm not really sure, to be completely honest, considering that the internet had pretty much spoiled everything anyways.
Well, obviously when they decided to polybag the thing, they didn't realize that someone was going to quote unquote leak a copy of number 10 out a couple of days prior to sales date. But let me take it from a different point of view. What was the reaction from your customers, or as a retailer, what is your reaction to having to deal with the 90s revisited here?
My reaction is I don't like it. This particular time, the customer reaction was pretty much nil. There was no comment. I think customers are getting used to the 90s being back.
Is that for sales wise? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because obviously the 90s had some incredibly huge, at least in terms of quantity, some huge spikes in sales.
I'll talk about two different books and say that it works and it doesn't work. Age of Ultron were sold out on, so I would have to say it worked. Superman Unchained, we're sitting on probably half the issues we ordered.
Wow.
Because we ordered so many so that we could get a number of the variant covers, which is, you know, not a good feeling. It kind of stings to sit there and see a Scott Snyder, Jim Lee book not selling.
Is it the sales point or what?
I'm not sure what it is. I mean, I just think that maybe there was only a certain number of customers who were going to be interested. I mean, it actually is the highest selling book in the store, to be completely honest, but we ordered more than double that number just to get the variants.
Yeah. Now, when you say the highest selling book, do you mean quantity or do you mean dollar wise?
Well, both, considering it's $3.99, but it has sold the most copies of any book in the store.
Okay.
But we're sitting on probably more than that number, still sitting on the shelf.
Can we point the finger of blame slightly at the fact that the movie has been getting lackluster reviews, or am I stretching the point too far, you think?
I don't know that there's a correlation, because the comic book is not an adaptation of the movie. It isn't taking place in the same universe as the movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's more an indictment of people's general feeling about the new 52 right now.
So it goes not just past, not just to Superman, but to the whole event, because it's still an event at this point, I think.
Yeah, I would say so.
And this week we're looking at, we've just cleared shelf space for the new Jay Lee Batman Superman number one, mm-hmm. which we also ordered heavy on so that we could get a couple of the variants. So we'll see how that flies.
So I take it from what you're saying, the way DC is going right now is your customers aren't happy with it, is what you're saying.
Sales on DC in general are completely down, except for Justice League and Batman. Mm-hmm. And when I say Batman, I mean just the title Batman.
Okay.
All other Batman related titles are dipping, as are, you know, Justice League and Justice League of America are staying pretty steady. Batman's staying steady. Mm-hmm. Superman is actually probably. And when I say Superman, I mean Superman, not Action Comics.
Right.
Superman is kind of holding steady. I would say all the other books in the entire line are down.
Mm-hmm. And for those that listeners that might not have listened to the last time you were on, where is the shop that you work at?
Well, good point.
I want to throw that out there. So
I work at Bebop Comics in Prairie Village, Kansas. Okay. The only multi-store chain in the Kansas City area, because we also have one in Kansas City, Missouri. Mm-hmm. So we have two stores, and so that's where we are.
Okay. So interesting. So what has been? Have you gotten any feedback on the Villains Month?
Oh yeah, we have already had people. We've had people ranging from the coming in, having read the online solicitations, coming in with very detailed lists of "I do want this, I don't want that," mm-hmm. to generally people just saying "I don't want any DC books that month." My boss and I had a conversation, I believe it was earlier this week, mm-hmm. Where we decided our strategy is the actual previews that this will be appearing in will hit our shelves this coming Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And when we sit down to chart out how many books we're going to be ordering, we're going to literally for every book in the new 52 that month, since a lot of the books, I'm sure you guys are aware, certain books aren't shipping at all. Nightwing, Batgirl, Batwing, Batwoman, all those Bat Family books aren't shipping, but any book with the word Batman in the actual title is shipping four times.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
So what we're going to do is go through the books that are actually shipping, we're going to go through every single, because what we do is we keep an index card for every single title,
okay.
And on that index card is written the names of all the subscribers to that title. So we will pull all those index cards and we will go through and we will say, do we think this person is going to want all four issues? Mm-hmm. Is this a diehard guy who's going to pay $4 a week for the 3D lenticular cover? Or is this a guy that we have to call once a month to remind him to come in and pick up his books? If it's a guy who falls in the latter category, we're going to not order the book for him that month.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because we don't want to get stuck with, a wall full of DC books that are overpriced that aren't going to sell.
Yeah.
So the numbers are actually going to be low. I would say that the number of books where... I tend to think that even though, let's say a book we might normally order 50 copies of,
mm-hmm.
and I go through the card and I decide there's six people who are iffy on it, and I'll say, so this month we're only going to order 44, because it's my initial decision to say what number is the set number, and then it's my boss's decision to say what's the actual order will number, or the actual number will order. And my guess is, depending on the title, if I say 44 and last month and every month before that the number was 50, and we might order, if the number was usually 50, we might order 55.
Mm-hmm.
My boss will either order just 50 in the hopes that, the stragglers pick up the spare normal copies that would have been
mm-hmm.
pre-purchased, or he'll split the difference and say, let's order 46 or 48.
Right.
I think we're going to see a huge... I would say we're going to see a huge drop in the number of books we're going to order, but they say that, but the books are coming out weekly, so it's, we're actually going to be ordering quite a few books.
Yeah.
So I don't recall from the solicits, they're just putting out these 3D. They're not putting out a 2D version for those who don't want to spend the extra money for the 3D, right? You have people who are buying the physical copy have no choice. Is that right?
That's my understanding of it, and I was thinking about, I'll give myself an example. I've taken myself off of most of DC's books for September.
Mm-hmm.
The only books I've kept on are Earth 2, Wonder Woman, Green Arrow, and Swamp Thing. And Green Arrow and Swamp Thing, they're only shipping one issue of each book that month, and Wonder Woman and Earth 2, they're only shipping two issues of each of those books that month. But I've thought, well, since I'm going to have so much spare money, I might find myself wandering over to the DC wall and thumbing through a book, and I might want certain books.
Mm-hmm.
But if certain books are selling out, I might have to order myself an advanced reorder copy. And I'm wondering if a book sells out too quickly, because I've already heard that they're only going to, that they've said that there's going to be a set number. I read on like Bleeding Cool or one of these other sites that,
yeah.
that DC will set the number based upon the initial order.
Wow.
And then they won't overprint. So if a book sells out because stores under-ordered, if I order and it comes in as a second printing, will the second printing have a 2D cover?
Mm.
I'm starting to wonder that. I haven't heard anything, but I'm starting to wonder. And I have already seen that they're offering an omnibus edition that will collect all of these Villain Month books.
I was just reading about that, trying to figure out how much they're going to charge for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to wait and see what they charge for it, and then I'm going to go onto one of these, not to take business away from my own
mm-hmm.
pocket, but go onto one of these sites that offers the trade paperbacks at, or hardcovers at 50% off.
Yeah.
And probably just, if it's affordable and I can afford it at 50% off and I have the spare money that month, I might order the book. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come out until December, so.
Yeah, it's almost 1,200 pages.
Yeah.
Jesus. It's like the Walking Dead compendium.
Yeah, that's probably going to be, because I was looking for it on Amazon to see if it maybe had pre-solicit, and I found the new 52-0 omnibus that has all the zero issues in it. That's got 1,344 pages, and the cover price is $150. But they're selling it for $89.68, which is 40% off. So that's a good chunk of change. So it's going to be at least $150, I would think.
Yeah, and if I have to pay over $80 for it, the chances are that I probably won't even order the omnibus.
No, uh-uh.
It probably will not have the 3D covers in it.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if these 3D lenticular, because thinking back to the 90s, the ones that had the 3D covers, they would have the normal cover, and then the 3D part of it would be like a little plate that would sit on the cover.
Yeah.
So if that's how they're going to be doing it, yeah, I don't see them reproducing the 3D covers in the Omnibus edition.
I don't either.
Not that I really give a crap, but, you know.
Right.
We already noticed that the background for, like, all the Green Lantern books, all the Lantern that are, it's the same background with just a different moving part on it, you know, whether it's that, I don't even know what the characters are. I have no clue. Probably, you know, Sinestro and that,
mm-hmm.
that new guy, whatever his name is, that, you know. Should know, but I don't know.
I've seen one of the Superman covers. I've seen the Superman cover with Bizarro. It's going to be the first appearance of the new 52 Bizarro, and it's like you said, it's the background doesn't move. It's the Bizarro character that seems to, his body kind of tilts from looking like he's facing left to facing center to facing right. As the cover moves.
Oh, it's like going to Disneyland, and when you see those busts at the end, they're watching me. He's following me. Wow. It's interesting. I mean, so as a retailer, you are personally, as a retailer and a fan, you are personally dropping. I don't know. Are you dropping those DC books for, like,
originally,
forever, or are you just discontinuing for September when there's all these non-continuity or incontinuity stories?
That's a really valid question, and I will tell you the reason I'm keeping Green Arrow and Swamp Thing is because they're limiting it to one issue a month, and the reason I'm keeping Earth 2 and Wonder Woman is both issues seem heavily tied into the actual continuity of what the book is actually doing right now.
Okay.
Originally, I was going to cancel all my books at number 23 since the September books are 23.1 through 23.4. Uh-huh. It's really going to depend, and I will admit, I'm really now curious to see the October solicits. It's going to depend on what the October solicits say.
Uh-huh.
If they capture my imagination, I'll just kind of sort of pretend that all the books I skipped, I'll pretend the point ones didn't exist, and I'll just go from 23 to 24.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't sound, because a lot of the 23, well, I would say most of the 23s are ending issues. Aquaman 23 is the last issue of the Death of a King storyline.
Mm-hmm.
All the Justice League number 23s are the end of the Trinity War storyline. So I want to see what number 24 is. If 24 doesn't grab my attention, I'm going to probably be out of the picture.
So 23 is August, and then they're doing these point ones for September, and then in in theory, October should be 20 points for all those titles. But then, of course, there's the titles that are not having a .1 or .2 or whatever. So do they skip the – I mean, basically, are skipping September altogether then.
Right, it won't affect them because it just means they won't have any .1 issues.
So, the Katanas and the Vibes
they'll go from number 5 to number 6 or whatever,
Skip a month of shipping up. But, of course, there just
won't be like a Vibe 5.1 or whatever, you know.
Right.
So we're not gonna get Vibe 4.1, the story of Crowbar. That's a shame. I'm...
That's funny.
I say that because Crowbar was one of the villains in the latest issue.
I haven't read that in a while.
And he was a Justice League Detroit villain.
Oh Lord.
Yes, he was. He was a member of that group of villains created by the Overmaster, as I recall.
The Cadre, I think. Was it the Cadre?
Yes. I believe you're right.
Yes, it was.
Listen to us geeking out on old Detroit Justice League.
Yeah. I did actually read that.
Detroit is better than Vibe, or better than Katana, excuse me, sorry. So.
Man, that's hilarious.
Oh dear.
Vibe has had some cool continuity moments thrown into it.
Man,
I'm sorry. They had in the latest issue of Vibe? Just to, sorry, I'm going to go totally off track here for just a minute.
Okay.
They had the Scissormen from the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I think they were in the first issue too, in one of those little tubes. Maybe not. Either way, yeah, that's cool.
That actually has me interested enough that I might actually like have to like open a Vibe issue.
Well, I got the first couple of issues and it was interesting, but it wasn't interesting enough, my opinion. But you know, whatever.
It's going the Howard Mackey route with one block over, two blocks down.
Oh, so. You're kidding me!
They haven't said it, but it feels like it.
Oh Lord.
So that actually brings me to another point. I mean, you know, they're throwing a lot of crap against the wall, and it appears, at least from your point, at least from this conversation, that not very much of it is actually sticking. Is that a good assessment?
I don't know that it's that they're throwing so much crap against the wall as, and I'll say this, and it's in direct contradiction to something that I saw a link that someone provided to. A Dan DiDio interview, the title of which was something that creative differences or creative turnover was a result of an overfabrication of social media.
Yeah, I put that on the Facebook page, yeah.
I will say that what DC is experiencing is huge creative turnover due to differences between writers and editors, and so these books have no direction. Mm-hmm. One month they're doing one thing, and then the next month you're like, where did this story come from? What happened to the story from last month? That seems to be what people, I think, are running away from.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if we all reflect back onto our early reading days in comic books, that wasn't as big of a deal because most of the stories only ran an issue or two anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays they are promoting these long the long game. And if they can't keep a direction on the long game, then it starts, like you said, it starts to wander. And a great example is Legion Lost, where they must have changed direction in the – I don't remember how many issues it was, but they probably changed direction like four times in the short
– Yeah.
Well, if they just hadn't crossed that over with that whole culling incident, I'm not sure it would have been as horrible as it was.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, but part of the changing of directions is low sales, right? Like when I think back to some of the series that I picked up, like, I don't know, Freedom Fighters or Secret Society of Supervillains, those books changed direction every 3 or 4 issues. Like there was a, like...
Oh yeah, you're right.
Like, you know, and that had to be sales dictated to a point, I guess. I mean, maybe the creative team just was shuffled onto another book or whatever, but for a couple of issues, Secret Society would have a real clear direction, and then it would, like, a month later, veer off into another completely different direction. So, I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
As someone who bought the hardcovers last year, I can vouch for what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, it's, I don't know, that's a book that just kept switching gears, hoping they would find something that would stick with the readers, that would catch their interest, and, but you're right, I mean, DC does seem to have this impression right now of mass exoduses and lots of the new, like, the whole Villains Month, part of me thinks, yeah, they're hoping for another New 52 with the number ones, where everyone buys everything and sales skyrocket and stuff. But part of me also thinks it could be like the Flashpoint summer, where they had a whole lot of little inconsequential miniseries done by a whole lot of writers that we never really saw again. I mean, in some cases we did. We saw some of those Flashpoint writers go on to become some of the writers of the current DC, but for the most part, they were done by editors or done by people that were given a shot and then kind of vanished. And a lot of these Villains Month issues are done by new creators. And maybe some of those guys will break away from the pack and become the next big thing at DC, or they won't. But
yeah, but I can't remember what book it was. There's one that they're actually, the solicitation itself was that this was going to be like her first ever writing gig at DC.
Yes. Oh yeah. I remember that solicit, but I don't remember the issue. Yeah.
There was a lot. I mean, we went over that in one of the episodes we did. There's a lot of them like that. People we had no idea who they were.
Yeah, and we went, you know, and to emphasize the point again from that episode is that we, you know, that's more a reflection on us than on the creators, because
they might be fine. It's just, you know.
Yeah, they're all people that have done. If we were to dig, they've all done, you know, indie creations or, you know, outside of comics work, but. You know, writing stuff, you know, whether it's TV or novels or stuff, but absolutely within comics, within mainstream comics, they're unknown quantities, and that's got to be that right there. That's a tough sell as well. I mean, yeah, you can throw you know, Bizarro at us, who is a very cool character, but to put a note, you know, to say, okay, it's Bizarro, cool character, but we're not going to tell you who this writer is or who this artist is. You're just going to have to trust us that it's good. That's tough at $4 a pop.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I believe the Bizarro issue, just to say, I believe that's being written by Sholly Fish, actually, which is a person I'm very, very familiar with. But
bad example. Sholly Fish
But I do agree with you. It's a tough sell. Because if the four of us don't know who it is, the chances of the customers walking into my store knowing who it is, the chances are they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, well, I think Amethyst Princess of Gemworld is a cool concept, and generally speaking, the current series has been pretty good. I have no freaking idea who Christy Marks is.
Oh, but she was excellent. You know, she was actually really excellent on that book until they force-fed her. They said that they had to tie it up in 8 issues, and they made the crux of the book the Eclipso character, which they forced on her.
Yeah,
because that was not something she wanted to play with the sword and sorcery stuff, and she was doing an excellent job, and then they force-fed her Eclipso and said, oh, and by the way, we're canceling your book at number 8. And, boy, I went from, I'm going to buy the first trade of this so my wife can read it because this is excellent, to, I'm not going to buy the trade for this.
Yeah, I agree.
It definitely, she proved herself. But you know, again, I wasn't buying the book because of the creator. I was buying the book because I'm an Amethyst geek, so.
I tried it out because I thought it was doing something new for a change, and it was actually cool. And it just like you said, I wanted to keep reading it. But once I found out they were canceling it, I was like, well, what's the point? You know.
That's the other thing, and not to make this a total bag on DC thing, but these titles, I mean, Sword of Sorcery, Threshold, they're not very they don't really give us the focus of who the main character is. I mean, if they called it Amethyst, mm-hmm. Do you think as a retailer, again, Amethyst is not like an A character, it's probably a C character at best, but it's got some cachet. Do you think it would have done better than Sword of Sorcery?
I think it would have, because I think the one thing I'll say about Sword of Sorcery is I thought those backups in there were horrid.
Even the Andraka one? I like the Andraka one, but okay.
I just didn't like the backups. So I would have been more keen for just more pages of the Amethyst story.
Mm-hmm.
Or a shorter book.
Mm-hmm.
No, or a 20 page book for less.
For a buck less, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I don't know.
You mentioned Threshold. I thought that was a great idea, but it just wasn't.
What's the title mean?
Well, A, I don't know what the title Threshold means, and B, it goes to Caleb's point that. Mm-hmm. The title character, it's like Threshold, it actually reads like Threshold Presents or something like that.
Yeah.
Or Threshold Starring. And the title character per se of these first four or five issues has been The Hunted, and no one knows what that is. And so who's buying that book? I thought the story was excellent. You know, if I don't know. I mean, that's kind of sort of almost a bad example because the main character of that isn't really a star either. He made his first appearance in a Green Lantern annual, and then his next appearance was in Threshold number one.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like an outcast Green Lantern. But yeah, having Threshold starring The Hunted, who cares, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, they should have pulled something... I don't know, reinvigorated some other character, which they did Captain Comet already in Action Comics. If they'd done something like that, I don't know. They could have done a lot better with it. They dropped the ball big time on that. I thought that could have been a really good book if they had, I don't know what happened with it. But
I mean, and would the book have sold better if it had been Threshold starring Lar Flees, who was the backup story in all those issues, and then having The Hunted as the backup story?
Yep. I think you're right. Or call it Space, you know, or Mystery in Space, or whatever the DC thing was, and starring so-and-so. Whatever that. What was the Adam Strange book, the one that he started? Was it Mystery in Space?
Strange Adventures.
Strange Adventures, there you go. Mm-hmm. So, I'm surprised they're not reviving those names. There seems to be an easy sell there. So I want to switch gears. I mean, it's clear DC is not setting the world on fire right now. And sales wise, would you say that, you know, they're still competing as number two though, right?
Well, they're I don't know that competing is the right word. They're number two. They're not anywhere near competing with Marvel at this point. They're nowhere near what they were doing when, I mean, DC actually won 2 years ago, won September, because it was the introduction of the new 52.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they won like September and October, and then like the next few months, it was like a dead heat. And since then, it's pretty much gone back to the pre-New 52 numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that though, and it's a switch gears to the marvelous competition across the street, is that quantity or is that dollar amount? Because Marvel cheats.
That could be either. I mean, either way you say it, that's going to be more. Because if they're putting out, you know, books twice a month, the same book, it's still going to be quantity and number wise, either one, because their books are majority of them are $3.99.
Yeah, the books that are single shipping, the well-known titles that are only shipping once a month are $3.99, and then the ones that aren't shipping, that aren't as popular, that aren't $3.99, that are $2.99, are shipping twice a month. So either way, they're winning the war.
Mm-hmm.
So Marvel has been putting out some very high-quality stuff lately, though. I mean, setting aside their sales strategy, All New X-Men is very good.
All New X-Men is very good. It's probably the highest selling Marvel title we have right now.
Really?
Yeah, it is. It is literally the highest selling Marvel title we have in our store. But I would say again, they've reached a point, they've reached their plateau point until they do this. There's going to be a second stage of the Marvel Now branding thing where they're going to launch more new titles under the Marvel Now banner. But they need it because they've plateaued out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the lower-selling titles, and I can't think of what they are. I know Morbius is one of them.
Well, they just got through canceling that.
But there's like three titles that month from Marvel that were all canceled, one of which wasn't even announced. It was Journey into Mystery.
That's right.
They didn't even announce they were canceling it. They just didn't put it in their solicits, and then they answered a reporter's question and said, yes, it's canceled.
Wow.
The higher-selling books have reached their critical mass, and they're staying there, or they're dropping off. They seem really event oriented right now. They're going directly from Age of Ultron into this Infinity thing. Everything seems to be revolving around events, and they're already already soliciting their new X-Men event, Children of the Atom or Age of the Atom or whatever the heck it's called.
Mm-hmm. Or is it War of the Atom? I don't know.
War of the Atom, yeah, something of the Atom. You know,
sort of the Atom?
No, I think it's Children of the Atom?
Could be. You know, everything is so event-driven, and I want to say that isn't working, but sales tell me that's not true because Age of Ultron sells like crazy. People don't seem very impressed by it. Word of mouth isn't very good on it, but it sold like crazy.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair to that title, the first half of that particular miniseries, and Murray, you would agree with this, was really intriguing. Was really
I have to admit, I liked it too.
So boring.
Really? The first half?
It was good for like three issues. It was good for three issues when it was actually about what the title was about, and then it became time hopping Wolverine killing Hank Pym, and then they came back to a future that was dominated by magic, and then this last issue where they, oh my god,
I'm reading through it now.
I don't want to ruin it for Mr. Mosby, but I will say number 10 was such the prototypical last issue of a Marvel event book nowadays in that it's not an ending. It doesn't provide an ending at all. What it is it ends up being an advertisement for three books that are coming out the next month.
Oh, Lord.
And literally, it'll introduce a storyline, and then the next page is a full-page ad for one of those three books.
Oh, good Lord.
And unfortunately, that ending was not designed for the non-hardcore Marvel fan. It was incredibly insulated.
Yes.
Incredibly. I mean, oh my god, I was like staring. I'm you know, clearly more of a DC guy, and I just do not know what most of those references were that were being shown there. I'm sure if I go out on the net, someone out there has identified what all the little shards of history are that are floating around those pages.
I can already tell you we've over-ordered what was... The first issue was advertised as Age of Ultron number 10 UC for unintended consequences. And then when they solicited number 2, it was solicited simply under the title Hunger. And it said in the solicitation this was originally solicited as Age of Ultron 10 UC. And it seemed very much to be leaning towards Galactus, who is going to be in the book, so they're not lying with that. But I can tell you we've over-ordered on number 1 and 2, because what it ends up being is 616 Marvel Galactus goes and fights the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, it seems like I read about that.
I can tell you already, most of my hardcore 616 people don't read the Ultimate Universe and don't give a crap.
I've never really cared about that either.
Is there really a dividing line between the 616 fans and the Ultimate fans? I had no clue.
Well, there are some people who read both, but there's a lot of people who just don't give a crap about the Ultimate Universe. It's only what is it now? 3 books? Ultimates, Spider-Man, and X-Men? And it's very much its own universe, and if you don't want to read those 3 books and don't want to have to deal with all their continuity, then you just don't read those 3 books. So why would you care that your Galactus is going over to fight a bunch of characters you don't know anything about?
Yeah, I bailed on Ultimates when Hickman was writing it, and it got too metaphysical for me. So I'm too stupid for that title. So
I agree.
And Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mosby agrees you're too stupid.
What's that?
Mosby agrees you're too
stupid. No. I meant the book.
No, he's met me. He knows. It's okay.
I know. No, you know that's not true.
And come on. You saw me wiping the drool most of the time. It was...
Jeez.
You know, and the bowl haircut. I mean, come on. It was definitely, Harry or Lloyd. It's hard to tell which. That said, yeah, and I dropped Ultimate Spider-Man when Peter Parker was out of the book. I that was the only Bendis book I was actually enjoying, and I didn't want to have to absorb a new continuity I've heard this, Morales is a really great character, but I can't, like you said, it's I don't want to deal with a new continuity. I can barely
And it depends on what you buy. You may end up having to deal with it, because rumor, and it's still rumor to me at this point, is that the Spider-Man in the new upcoming Mighty Avengers book is actually the Miles Morales character, not the Dr. Octopus Spider-Man.
Okay.
Coming to the 616?
Yeah, supposedly, maybe, possibly. That's the rumor. If you're reading Bleeding Cool on those websites, that's what they're saying.
You should bring the 2099 character back.
They did that. They're doing that. He's crossing over with the Doc Ock Spider-Man in his own book. And that's actually previewed in Age of Ultron number 10, because one of the shards of the... when time breaks and time is represented by a big yellow pane of glass... and it breaks as like a bunch of little shards. One of the shards actually shows Spider-Man 2099. So we know how he's getting to the 616 universe, because time is broken.
Marvel, by the way, maybe it's a new mandate there. They don't give a crap about time travel anymore in Marvel.
Well, as of Age of Ultron number 10, they do, because they say... The whole deus ex machina for the book is that all the time traveling that's been going on, like young X-Men coming forward in time and Wolverine going back in time to kill Hank Pym, they've crossed time too many times and they've broken it, is basically what it is. They've broken the barriers between dimensions and time periods because they've time traveled too much.
Well, check out in Fantastic Four. I mean, they just recreated Dr. Doom's origin in the latest issue of Fantastic.
Yeah, I saw that coming.
I haven't read it yet. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I have it in my to-read pile.
There's your... I was just reading the last issue of Age of Ultron where we're talking, and there's your link to that other Spider-Man right there. Amazing.
and Uncanny Avengers has also been screwing with time.
Have they? I haven't read that in a while.
Yeah, because Kang went and kidnapped the children of Archangel and one of his four horsemen of the apocalypse and took them into the future to raise them, and then they come back in time to foil his plot and rule the world or something like that.
But Kang, what are we going to do tonight? Same thing we do every night.
Wow. Amazing.
Yes. So,
I'm looking at this. They just did what DC did. This is their Flashpoint.
It is and it isn't, though, because they're not redoing all the titles.
Well, so far that we know.
Ooh, good point.
Because this just happened.
But they would. So, Chris, from a sales point of view, that would Marvel. Yeah, granted, they would a whole mess of number ones would be a huge sales boon, but that's not Marvel's a normal modus operandi.
Well, I mean, it's sort of. It seems like both companies have fallen back into. I can't remember who it was. There was an executive in the 1960s. I don't remember if it was Mort Weisinger or whoever it was, but who said that you had to reboot the characters every 3 to 4 years because the readers are turning over. In other words, they're aging out and we're getting new young readers. That's not true anymore, but it seems like Marvel and DC every few years are relaunching all their books with new number ones, usually to coincide with movie releases, and then basically hoping people find that as an easy picking up point, where in fact what people are finding it is an easy dropping off point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my point was that Marvel and Quesada, to be more specific, have said, you know, we don't reboot our continuity, as opposed to DC, who does in fact reboot their continuity, as you said, every 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and I thought there's a quote floating around the internet, and it's something Quesada said about the day the Ultimate Universe crosses over with the 616 universe is the day we've run out of ideas. Well,
gee, that happened recently, didn't it?
Well, I mean, it happened in there was a series called Spider-Man that was really well received and really well written, might I add, where Peter Parker met Miles Morales, and now you're getting Spider-Man 2099 is going to come into Superior Spider-Man, and the Ultimate Spider-Man might be on the new Mighty Avengers. So what does it tell you? That the thing he said that they would only do when they run out of ideas is what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about
that it. That Spider-Man mini was great, by the way. Yes.
It was. It was an excellent. I loved it.
So how is Superior Spider-Man being received?
It's holding steady, probably right where Amazing Spider-Man was when it canceled. There was an initial boost because everyone was wondering what was going on. Then there was a drop off. And it's kind of sort of picked back up, which speaks to the fact that it's actually somewhat interesting, but then it's just holding there.
I think it's interesting. Lately, Dan Slott is actually not the primary writer anymore, which was a little disheartening to see. I can't remember who the he's plotting, but someone else is scripting it now.
Interesting.
I enjoy it. I like the concept. And they keep going against what I just assume is going to happen almost immediately, which is they're gonna you know drift back into the old you know with Peter Parker coming back. But they've gone through great lengths to eliminate that possibility as much as possible. And I think that's bold. That is incredibly bold.
what's really stunning me is all these spin-off series they're doing now. The Superior Carnage and Superior Foes of Spider-Man. And
yeah.
Superior, what is it? Superior Spider-Man Team-Up.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's been, you know, in Scarlet Spider and what else have they got? They got a couple other Spider, Morbius. Morbius didn't sell, but,
Venom.
Venom, right. Do these titles, I mean, setting aside the fact that Morbius, you know, really had a very thin line between it and the Spider titles, are the other, are Venom and Scarlet Spider selling?
No.
No.
to be plain and simple about it, no.
Okay. Well, there you go.
That's
whoa! Did we lose him again?
We lost Murray.
Alright.
I have to step away for just a sec. Sorry.
Alright, that's fine. Come on back, Murray! No, okay, let me try this again.
There he is. Looks like, oh, you're dialing him.
Yeah. Come on back. Let's see.
I think we have Murray back.
You back?
Back, yep.
All did everybody right. drop?
It wasn't just me?
No, it was just you.
No, it wasn't me.
Although Caleb has stepped away for a moment. So.
Yes, yeah. He's...
Alrighty.
So, where were we?
The ancillary Spider titles were not selling.
Ah, yes.
What about the ancillary Avengers books, like Hawkeye?
I wish I could say Hawkeye was selling better. It's got a core readership and it's reached its plateau, but I still think it's one of the top three Marvel books out there, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I need to catch up on that because I really like that book.
And the other two being?
It'd be hard pressed to say what the third one is. I'm sure it's out there, but the, I mean, obviously, like I said, I know for a fact number one is all new X-Men.
Mm.
I think Avengers is probably up there.
But quality wise, though, Hawkeye and Daredevil and Indestructible Hulk are probably their top quality books, right?
I don't know about Incredible Hulk. Incredible Hulk, I'll tell you, the books that dropped off, that completely almost dropped out of sales, are Incredible Hulk, Captain America, and Iron Man. We've lost almost all of our subs on those three titles. Thor is doing well. You know, Avengers is doing well. New Avengers is doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's take from that what you will.
Are those two selling about the same, Avengers and New Avengers?
I think a few more people are reading Avengers than are reading New Avengers, basically because a lot of what I've heard is people are saying, oh, New Avengers isn't really Avengers, it's Illuminati. It should be called Illuminati because that's what it is. It's not really an Avengers book per se.
Someone eating chips?
Oh no, I was drinking, sorry.
Oh.
My bad, it was ice.
it's a very thinky book.
Yeah.
Takes a lot of it's Hickman doing his thinky thing again in the mainstream comic book world. So speaking of Hickman, Hickman is knocks it out of the park with his indie stuff, with East of West and Manhattan Project, and I'm sure he's doing something else, but How about on the indie side? Is there anything, I mean, setting aside Walking Dead, is there anything else that's jumping out right now?
Oh, yeah. Like you said, I think East of West and Manhattan Projects have both, again, plateaued at where they're going to be. But East of West, number one, was such a huge success. They've reprinted. I think we're on our fourth printing of that.
Wow.
There's been a lot of stuff out there. I mean, Walking Dead is obviously doing really well for itself. Mm. Saga, despite the fact that Saga hasn't put out a new issue in 2 months and isn't going to have a new issue out, I think, until August, Saga is still selling well. My Little Pony is just now experiencing a die-off. but for most of the spring / early summer, it was selling like hotcakes, you know? I mean, Occupy Comics by Black Mask Studios, number one, was incredibly well received.
What is that?
It is a book. It was initially funded by Kickstarter. It is a book mostly dealing with short stories about the Occupy movement, you know, like Occupy Wall Street and such like that.
Okay.
But it's got a lot of mainstream creators. J.M. DeMatteis, Alan Moore is writing like a 6-page article in every issue. It's on number two already. Number two just came out, I think, this last week. But number one sold incredibly well, and number two we underordered. Aspen Comics has this initiative called 10 for 10, where they're releasing 10 new number ones over the one a month over 10 months. And each new number one comes out at $1. And those number ones at $1 are doing really well. Beyond number one, they're not doing so hot, but the number ones for $1 is working really well. The big winner, is Jupiter's Legacy.
Yeah, what is exactly is that about? I haven't had a chance to
imagine a bunch of explorers, like pulp character type explorers, find a deserted King Kong like island, only instead of maybe having dinosaurs and giant apes on it, whatever it is they find there turns them into the first wave of 1940s superheroes, and then all of a sudden you jump forward to 2013 and these heroes are now old, but they're still superheroes, and they're finding that their value system is completely out of sync with like their grandchildren who have all inherited their superpowers.
Oh, so basically Kingdom Come.
Yeah, very much in that kind of sort of thing, yeah.
Okay.
Did number two of that come out?
It is coming out this coming Wednesday.
Okay.
It is selling Justice League numbers. Which is highly
impressive.
Yeah,
I heard it was something that was controversial or something. I'll have to check that out. That sounds interesting.
I thought number one was slow. It was all set up, not a lot of payoff.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to seeing what happens when they actually get into a storyline. You know.
Yeah.
Issue one ends up with one of the grandchildren characters ODing on cocaine and falling through a glass table, and that's where the issue ends, is her laying on the floor ODed on coke.
Nice.
This is clearly Mark Millar, as well as Brian Hitch, setting up for, you know, to
Frank,
market.
It's Frank Quietly, actually.
I'm sorry. You're
really?
Right. Apologies, yeah, but they're clearly, I think they're clearly setting up to do something outside of comics with this. I mean, that's Mark Millar's bailiwick is not comics anymore. It's comics are a vehicle to getting, you know, movies or TV show made.
You know, Jupiter's
and this
Legacy,
would actually make a decent TV show.
Jupiter's Legacy is probably selling 30, and this is what's impressive about it. I would say the highest selling indie title before Jupiter's Legacy was Walking Dead, and Jupiter's Legacy is outselling Walking Dead by 30%.
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay. That's serious shit there.
How did they promote this thing? I mean, because Walking Dead has got all the civilians reading it. That's its big thing, is because obviously the TV show. How did Walking Dead reach out to the non comic book world for this?
You got me on that. I have no idea how Jupiter's Legacy is reaching this audience, but apparently there's people who want new superhero comics that are about superheroes that didn't exist before.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which is why, Valiant is for me is so cool, because I feel like I'm getting in on the ground floor, mm-hmm. and I don't, you know, as much as I, you know, enjoy and understand the continuity of DC and Marvel, I just love the fact that we're able to get in on something brand spanking new with Valiant.
Absolutely.
Harbinger.
See, in our store, we're underselling Valiant. We're not carrying very many, if any, shelf copies. Even though I'm collecting all of them, and I agree with you, for the most part, it's excellent. We have people come in all the time asking if we have the latest Valiant book, but
mm-hmm.
but when we do over-order them, then they just sit on the shelf.
That's funny.
The Catch-22.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
You know, good word of mouth, but when you put too many copies on the shelf, then you're stuck.
Yeah.
They need to find however Jupiter's Legacy got it out there into the wide world. They need to do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
They need a better marketing. Is what they need.
Yes. Can't stick with Facebook and CBR and Newsarama. They need to go outside of that somehow.
Yeah, which, you know, DC's been doing that with USA Today and other stuff, and I don't know. I'll have to look that up, see where, you know, if any thing like that's been, you know, doing that. That's interesting.
They're not.
Okay.
They wish they were, but they're not. Not yet.
And the book I'm looking forward to that's coming up, hopefully, and I'm hoping it'll sell well. And I think we're under ordering it, because we're already ordering like number three, even though number one's not out yet, is Image Comics is doing the Greg Rucka, Michael Lark book called Lazarus.
Mm.
And I'm really hoping that'll do well.
And which one is that? You're going to have to, for the uneducated like me.
Like I said, number one's not out yet, so it's not easy for me to give you too much of a synopsis on it, but it seems to be the story of they've trained this assassin. It's kind of, are you familiar with the TV show Dollhouse?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Where Elijah Dushku played this, like, they could mind wipe her and then implant a personality in her and send her off on a mission. And this lady's missions usually involve assassinating people. But what happens when she starts becoming self-aware and questioning whether or not she should be doing what she's doing, and she's starting to having to fight through all these false memories of who she is, and finds out what kind of people she's really working for.
Mm. Interesting.
I just think Greg Rucka and Michael Lark is such a good creative team. I think it's destined to do well.
Yeah, I like Greg Rucka's stuff. I need to find more of his. Was it he the one that did that Fatale series?
No, that's Ed Brubaker.
Ed Brubaker. Okay, never mind. Something else that he did. Oh, I forget.
He did Stumptown at Oni Press with Michael Southworth.
That's right. I've been meaning to read some of that stuff because I like both of their work. So yeah. Cool.
I would like to see Rucka doing some more Batman stuff, but that's just
me. Yeah, well, I don't think he's going to be working with them ever. He's doing his own thing for quite a while.
I think that's true of all these guys. I think Mark Miller, I think you're going to very rarely see him working at Marvel or DC,
mm-hmm.
Unless it's something like very Elseworldsy at DC where he can tell it outside of continuity. Ed Brubaker has left Marvel and is now, you know, exclusively focusing on Fatal and his own creator-owned stuff. Grant Morrison's heading in that direction as soon as he finishes up Batman Incorporated. These guys are not idiots. They've figured out that they can create their own universe and have no rules and still sell just as well and probably make more money off of it.
Because they don't have to sell. I mean, based on our conversation with Chris Roberson a couple months ago, is that you don't necessarily. I mean, with the indie books where they take a much larger percentage of the sales numbers once it breaks the overhead.
Once it breaks the overhead,
they keep so much more of it that their quantity number can be lower than a Batman or an all new X-Men or Batman Inc. or any of those for them to still make the kind of money that they would like to have to pay the bills.
Roberson is another favorite of mine. I'm the only person in my store who's ordering Oni Press's The Strangers, which was actually one of the free Comic Book Day offerings this year.
Yeah, I think we were talking about that last week.
Murray, you read that, right?
I loved it.
Yeah, I did too. I'm so looking forward to the ongoing series. I really, really am.
I'm going to have to check that out.
It's free. Comixology.com.
So,
oh, it's on there now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And it's good.
As a retailer, do you, because we don't get it out here, do you have any, insight into the, into digital numbers?
I have none. I would hazard a guess to say there's been articles over the last 6 months to a year that say that digital hasn't infringed on print and that, in fact, it might actually be bringing people into print. I would argue that the fact that Marvel and DC's numbers are slipping might actually say that's not true.
Yeah. But the stuff that originally is digital and then goes to print, like Injustice or Smallville,
those do well. You know, Injustice, Gods Among Us is doing really well in print. Adventures of Superman is doing really well.
Yeah, because those. I mean, I speaking with someone at Phoenix Con, that Injustice is the number one selling digital first comic book out there right now. So I would hope that print would be doing decent numbers as well.
I mean we're carrying fourth printings of number one.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, for all the naysayers of it, it's the numbers don't agree with that feeling.
I don't usually read tie-ins like that, so.
You wouldn't like it. It is totally something you wouldn't like. It's very anti-hero. There's lots of chest-busting type stuff. So
I've kind of figured that from what I've seen.
Not a fun. I think it's fun. I like that kind of stuff, but I read Deadpool, so. I am clearly a different target audience than you.
Yeah, I figured that much.
Just to give you guys some insight on where I think the industry, at least, hold on, I'm getting echo on my end.
Yeah, it'll just give it a second, it'll go away.
It'll go away.
The first quarter of this year, we did, actually, I think we exceeded our expectations. We have an incentive program based on whether or not the franchise of the two stores meets or exceeds its expectations in terms of sales numbers, and we got our bonuses, which was nice. Nine out of the 13 weeks of the first quarter, we meet or exceeded the sales numbers we needed to. I just completed week 12 of quarter 2, and so far only 3 out of the 12 weeks have we exceeded or met expectations. So quarter 2 has been a disaster for us. I'm fully not expecting my bonus for quarter 2. I think our average item, because I can tell you this because we break this kind of down on our weekly sales sheets. Our average item probably that we ring up probably costs anywhere between $4 and $5.50. The average sale per customer probably averages between $20 and $30.
That's only 4 or 5 titles.
And this quarter two, even the 3 weeks that we've met or exceeded expectations, 2 of them we barely met the expectation, and the 3rd one was Free Comic Book Day week, which we massively exceeded our expectations, obviously, on that week. I would say back issue sales in the store are down hugely, but trade paperbacks are holding steady. And I'll tell you, a huge part of the business right now is discount trades. You know, when Diamond is offering discounted trade paperback and hardcover sales from anywhere from 75 to 90% off.
Wow.
Retailers are snapping those up and then turning around and selling them for 50 off in the store. The only hard part is that we're competing against Amazon and eBay and a lot of indie sellers, convention guys maybe, who are buying up these same books from Diamond and then turning around and selling them for 75% off, you know, undercutting our price. And that's just, so just to give you guys some insight into the business part of it, that's some of the numbers I have.
It was interesting. At the Phoenix Con, there was only a couple of retailers selling trades. I had difficulty finding any trades that I wanted to buy. And maybe that's just because I've become more selective or I was just being cheap. But it wasn't a ton, at least at the Phoenix Con, which in the past has been a decent place to go to get, comics.
Yeah.
A comic con.
I got to go. I usually do not get to go to the big local Kansas City convention every year because I usually work that weekend at the store. Yeah. This weekend I managed to finagle a day off and I went as a spectator. And I was seeing examples of what I was talking about. Like, I know we bought, I don't remember what discount we got on, you know, like I'm saying, it's pretty typical, stereotypical Marvel discount, 75 to 90% off. Reprints of the old Mick Anglo Marvel Man stuff in hardcover.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we're selling them, you know, we're selling them at 50 to 75% off because we got such a good price on them. And I went to the convention in Kansas City here, Planet Comic Con, and I was seeing guys selling them for like $3 to $5 a piece.
Wow.
What really shocked me at the conventions was the number of booths that seemed filled with nothing but the 1 in 100 and 1 in 200 variants of all the, you know, the last year's worth of comic books. Because I was just wondering how these people got all these variants, you know? Are they really ordering enough books at wherever they're from to get these variants? And how much are they blowing the normal issues out at in order to turn around and go to the convention and sell the variants for, you know, the $50 that they were marked at or whatever?
Yeah. Interesting.
It still amazed me. I've never, ever, ever been into that. Even when I was, you know, my brief time as a retailer, the whole variant or
sector, whatever. Yeah.
Never.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
You're breaking up on us, Caleb.
I never got the mentality of the variant cover. It just
it drives me crazy. It really does. I mean, there's nothing wrong with one every once in a while, but it's like, I mean, Dynamite is real bad about it. I think they've cut down a little bit, but it's just, I don't know. It's just bad, I think.
Well, how many variants were there for Guardians of the Galaxy number one? Was it like 8 or 9?
I don't know. I don't even pay attention to that anymore. It just aggravates me.
The only two that we've really bought into recently are the Batman Superman, which comes out this coming Wednesday, and the Superman Unchained. There was a, what was it? It was a Golden Age variant, Silver Age variant, Bronze Age variant, Modern Age variant, New 52 variant, the Lex Luthor variant, and the 1939 Superman variant. So there were 7 variants.
Oh, Lord. That's crazy. That's insane.
Wow. But you have customers who are going to want those, right?
Well, so far we sold a whole bunch of the new 52 variant, which is the one we sell the cheapest because we got the most of. And the only other one I've sold so far is the Silver Age variant, which we only got one of. The rest of them are still sitting on my shelf.
Wow. I'd love to see what the numbers are in terms of how many shipped on those particular ones and see actually how rare those are. It strikes me, though, based on your experience, that the Silver Age one was probably had very low shipping numbers.
Well, I would think the one with the lowest shipping number is going to be the 1939 Superman one. It's a Bruce Timm drawing of a 1939 style Superman, and it's the 1 in 100 variant.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Did you get any?
We have one in each of our stores.
Wow.
And we have them stickered at $75.
Wow.
Bowser's Batman.
But for the most part, Marvel and DC, we don't play the variant game anymore. You know, if we're ordering most DC, well, I would say all DC variants now are 1 in 25s, and most of their variant is what it is a black and white version of the normal cover. If we're ordering 29 of one, we might order the variant. Mm-hmm. But if we're ordering 20 of one, we might used to try and snuck a variant in there to see if Diamond would actually ship it to us.
Mm-hmm.
But anymore, we're like, yeah, it's just not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel's totally insane because they've got their, I think their low threshold on variants is like 1 in 50. And they have like 1 in 100s, and then there's usually like a 1 in 200 that's either a sketch of the one, it's either a sketch variant of the 1 in 100 variant, or it's a Quesada variant.
How does a small little mom and pop in Podunk, Missouri, get those? I mean, it just seems impossible.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when I go to the convention and see booths filled with these variants, I'm like, where did these people get these variants, you know? And what I was actually told by somebody who's a convention dealer is what mostly happens is they go online and they scoop them up online and then turn around and sell them for more at conventions.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's the yard sale mentality. Go and get something in a yard sale, refurb it a little bit, and then turn around on eBay and sell it.
Yep.
It works for some people. Some people make a living that way. So overall, I mean, on the positive side, I mean, overall, it sounds like, on the whole, there's still money being made. It was 2012. Was it a red year or a black year?
I'd say 2012, wasn't a great financial year for us. If we did not have our eBay store, we probably would not have come out ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But because we had our eBay store, we probably, you know, came out okay. I would say the same thing is happening again this year. I know the one of the two stores that I do not work in is what we would call the main store. You know, we're the sister store where I work. Mm-hmm. And the sister store does not make nearly as much money as the main branch. But we run all the eBay operations out of the sister store, which is what we spend a large percentage of our time on, is the eBay, answering questions, answering complaints, doing the shipping and packing, doing the listing, is all done out of the sister store. You know, I'll give you an example. We sold, we had it stickered at $3,000. It was a non-CGC copy. We had it labeled as very good define X-Men number one. We had it stickered at $3,000. We sold it online this last week on eBay for $2,800. And that's going to help our bottom line hugely because I don't know what we paid for it, but $2,800 is a good profit to turn in, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
That sounds like it.
It sounds like work.
It is. There's a lot of work that goes into it. I think that what we're going to see, profit coming out of comic books, strangely enough, and I think it was Caleb who made the point, what about the digital stuff? The digital stuff that finds its way into print, mm-hmm. and then all these creators who have left the big two to go do their own thing. I think in the years to come, I think those are the two things, the two areas where you're going to see the most money being spent on comics, and I think it's because it's original content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something new. A lot of these digital comics that are finding their way into print, they're out of continuity stories, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see it.
So our other retailer friend that has joined us on the podcast, Mike Wellman out of Manhattan Beach, California, he is vehemently against the concept of the Kickstarter. Do you have a opinion one way or another?
As a retailer, I don't see it having any effect. I'll give you an example. Cyberforce, the new Cyberforce comic, was started as a Kickstarter and then offered to the comic book stores for really cheap, and then we could give them, the thought was we would buy them for like 25 cents a copy and then we would give them away. Sort of like free comic book day books only every month. We didn't do that. The first issue we sold them for 25 cents. The second issue we sold them for 50 cents. By the third issue we were selling them for $1. And sales have slowed the more we've increased the price. I don't see it having any effect on the brick-and-mortar stores. I contribute actively to a number of Kickstarter things because I think it promotes these high either indie creators or big-name creators who want to do something new that isn't dependent on selling their soul to Marvel or DC to do.
Mm-hmm.
I've contributed a lot of money in the last 2 years to a number of Kickstarter books. I think it's a good thing. I think it speaks in general to the trend of what I was saying is going to be selling in comic book stores in the next couple of years, which is stuff that people haven't seen before, that's mm-hmm. what people want to spend their money on because they want to try something new that they don't have to read. They don't have to come in and ask the guy behind the counter, you know, where in all your back issues can I find the 20 issues I need in order to understand the new issue of Batman?
Yeah.
That's a fair point. I mean, I guess, and Mike's issue with the whole concept of the Kickstarter is, you know, that enough people try and do these Kickstarters and then don't follow through. You know, they're such a, you know, I don't know what the actual percentage is, but it's a big enough percentage of people try, you know, go out there with the intention of doing a Kickstarter comic and then get money and then never actually put out a product. So.
Well, and I will say I've contributed to numerous ones over the last 2 or 3 years. And I finally had one where the due date came and went, and I didn't get my book, and I contacted the person, and she claimed she sent it out, but she blamed it on the post office. And what I had contributed to was for single issues of the comics to be mailed to me, and she said, well, you know, I'm out of the single issues, but we collected it in a trade. Would it be okay if I...
Whoa.
Would it be okay if I sent you the trade? And I told her, go ahead and send me the trade. And she did send it to me. I'm very happy with it. And
that's good.
You know, in the long run, I think these people will produce the books. It's just a matter of, you know, a lot of them, they end up doing the what they call these stretch goal things where they decide that, you know, originally the book was going to be black and white, but now we've decided we made enough money, we can do it in color, or we've decided that, you know, we had a bigger story we wanted to tell, but we didn't think we'd be able to raise enough money for that page count, and now we have enough money that we can do, instead of a 120-page graphic novel, we can do a 156-page graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm willing to wait, you know. It's just a matter of patience. I understand it's frustration. You know, mm-hmm. When I put my money down, I want to see something for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's half of his frustration. Obviously, the other half is seeing people like Backcraft apparently was asking money for a Kickstarter. And like,
okay, interrupt just a second. We lost Murray again, and we're trying to get him back, and all we're hearing is static. So please bear with us and hear it in the background there. I'm going to drop him again, so continue.
We're going to drop him like a bad habit. We're going to drop him like a skanky girlfriend.
He said he was out in the boonies where the Wi-Fi is spotty, so.
Is he chasing docs again?
I don't know.
Okay. Hunting and pelting. All right.
Anyway, continue. Try to bring him back in a second.
I was just curious about it. I mean, obviously, I can't imagine for a heartbeat that any Kickstarter, unless it actually moves on to second or third issues, has any impact on retail. But I was just curious about your opinion on that.
I'm a supporter of what it stands for, as long as they do produce the product.
Yeah, because I mean that was always the complaint of the last, you know, about, you know, up until a couple years ago with Marvel and DC of, you know, the late shipping book, which I, you know, from as a reader, I think DC and Marvel have made a huge U-turn on that and you know are willing to get fill-in artists and to make sure that we don't see that kind of slippage again.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Unfortunately, now we're in the other direction where Marvel's like, well, if I can sell one issue a month, then selling two issues a month would be even better. And now DC seems to be saying, well, let's try that for a month and we'll put out every Batman and Superman book once a week and see how that sells. And by the way, let's put a gimmick cover on them and charge an extra dollar for it and see how many people will be willing to pay $4 for a Batman comic instead of $3. And my fear is that this is a test case to see what they can get away with.
Yeah, I think so too. I really do.
I'd be interested to catch up with you in a few weeks and see what the order numbers are for Villains Month. It would be a good quick catch up with you and say, hey, yeah, the numbers on Villains Month are XYZ. The pre-order numbers, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And even more interesting, what the sell-through is.
Yeah, in early October, find out, you know, actually how many, you know, freaking shelf copies you have sitting around. If any. I mean, obviously the hope is to have zero. And you know, as a supporter of the industry, I hope you have, you know, I hope you have to go back and get reorders on stuff, because that means that, that things worked.
Well, let's see. It looks like Murray has he's apparently got affected by the Age of Ultron time shift. Not really able to get him back. We can type to him, but that doesn't come over the podcast pretty well. So yeah, we're gonna let him go, and it's about time to wrap this up anyway, I think.
Bye, Murray.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm running out of things to talk about. So.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
Thank you for
the other Chris.
Okay, man. You're Mosby.
Yes, I forgot.
No problem. I enjoy talking with you guys. I enjoy listening to your show, and I enjoy talking with you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, and as a fan, I'm sorry to see that you and John are not doing your podcast anymore. I'm enjoying that. So.
We've actually I just recently contacted John. I haven't actually even physically seen him in a while. He's his job is moving him from here to South Carolina in about a month.
Wow.
So he is, and we could still do the show over Skype, but he's been really busy. He's in the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
So between his job taking up his time, and he's married. And then
that always screws crap up, man.
And then he and his wife have been traveling from here to South Carolina to scope out, you know, where are we going to live, you know, setting all that stuff up. And then I went through some medical things on my end
that just
made it where I told him what it was, and because he's in the medical profession, he was very understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to take time off because I couldn't dedicate the time to do the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I contacted him recently and told him, I said, you know, I'm getting a lot of people coming into the shop saying, you two aren't doing the show anymore. Why aren't you doing the show anymore? We really miss you guys. We really enjoy your show.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked up the stats and said he couldn't believe how many more downloads we've actually had since we stopped recording than we had when we were still recording. So, you know, if I get back on my feet completely medically here and he gets himself moved and settled in and we get our Skype situation worked out, we'll hopefully maybe be picking that back up.
And for those who didn't, you know, were wondering, it's called Dead Trees and Dinosaurs. It's a fun, you know, half hour. I mean, I mm-hmm. think you guys are incredibly good about keeping it focused time-wise and content-wise. I think that's really cool. And speaking as someone who does a podcast with two people who are not even in the same freaking time zones, it's possible to do.
Yeah. It's it's difficult sometimes, but it is possible.
Well, that's one of the other hard parts is that my work week is Wednesday to Saturday, and his work week is Monday to Wednesday, although I don't know if that'll stay the same once he moves to South Carolina, so mm-hmm. we'll see.
Yeah.
It's a fun show, and I, you know, all of a sudden I was saying, wait a minute, this hasn't updated since whenever, I think March or something like that, so. I wish you luck on the medical situation. You don't need to share. That's fine. And I understand speaking, you know, both Chris and I, or Mosby and I, can appreciate medical situations.
And Murray too, I'm sure.
Yes.
And he gives his goodbyes, by the way. So.
And John's, you know, John moving, that's always a pain in the ass. So.
Oh God. Yeah. I'm done. I'll never do it again. I'm going to be buried right here. Right where I'm sitting. Yeah, well, in the basement. Yeah, exactly. With earphones on.
With a Batman comic in his hand.
Probably. And my power battery.
That's right.
All right, well, let's see. Let's wrap this up.
Right. I think it's probably time to wrap it up. So once again, your comic shop is?
Bebop Comics, Prairie Village, Kansas, or Kansas City, Missouri.
Cool.
And you primarily work out of the
Prairie Village store.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Great.
Anybody wants to put a face with the voice, Prairie Village, Kansas, is the place to do it.
All right. Well, let's see. Wrapping this up for this week. And once again, thanks for coming on, Chris. We appreciate it. If you want to send an email at podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com, let us know what you think of this and about ideas for the show or anything else you want to talk about. Just drop us a line. Or you can come in and check out the Facebook page. Lots of good conversation going on there. And just do a little search for the show, and you'll find us pretty easy. And then, as of course, you can also comment on the actual episodes and let us know what you think. And that is it for this week.
Thanks again, Chris, for dialing in, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, guys.